Hi guys, and welcome to Road to Forex, where we discuss everything in relation to the foreign exchange. Of course, I am your host Alex. Without further ado, let's get stuck into today's episode. Hey guys, I've got such a special episode for you all today, because it's an interview with Adrian Reet. Now, he is a full-time private trader with over 20 years of experience. He's also a fellow Aussie, which gained some massive brownie points for me, and he's the founder and head trading coach at Enlightened Stock Trading. And this is where 20 years worth of experience comes in such a massive bonus to you guys, because he teaches you a systematic approach to trading that you can make fully automated, right? I won't give too much away here because he talks about it within the episode. If you want to learn more, the link to Enlightened Stock Trading is in the description to this episode as well. But just know that his success has netted him hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and allowed him to leave his job within the corporate world in 2012, which is absolutely fantastic. Now, what I want you to do is sit back and relax as I ask him some fantastic questions and he answers them absolutely beautifully. One last thing. There might be a little bit of a deviation in sound quality. Unfortunately, the two softwares that I used to record simultaneously, well, one of them died. So I do apologize for that. But again, I would really love you guys to sit and listen to this, because the answers that come through here, well, you can only find them with a trader that has as much experience and knowledge in the market as Adrian. And that's all I have to say. Enjoy it, guys. I will see you at the end of this interview. Cool. So, I guess first things first, can you share a little bit about your trading journey? You know, what got you into trading?
Sure. Well, what really got me into trading was when I started in the corporate world, I realized very quickly I didn't want to be in a corporate world, at least not forever. So I guess I started looking for a way out as I was on the way in. Mm-hmm. And so I had a conversation with my dad shortly after I started work, which was basically, how do I retire early? And of course, he laughed at me. I'm 20-something and wanting to retire, and he's still working. And so anyway, that got us onto the conversation about investing and the different modes of investing. We talked about property, we talked about stocks, precious metals, all these things. And I didn't really have the money for property at the time. I wasn't really that interested. I had at least learned a little about the stock market. Mm-hmm. We had played this game as a family when we were young called the stock market game, which was, it's probably way before your time, but it was, it's a board game, kind of like Monopoly, where you go around the board, you roll a dice, and every square you land on, the market either moves up or down. Mm-hmm. And there was six or eight stops in the market. And depending on where the market indicator was, that's determined the price of the stocks. So you bought and sold and you collected dividends and you became a billionaire, and it was amazing. I kind of liked the market from this impression I had from this game from when I was a kid. And this was when I was 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah.
And so that really got me kind of interested in the markets. And then I went down the usual path of trying all of the different methods and, most of them not working, and trying to find something that suited me. And, well, we can get into, what I chose and why, but that's what really kicked it off. And so I've been trading since then. And fast forward to 2012, I stepped out of the corporate world to trade full time. And so now I'm trading long short equities and crypto. In equities, I trade Australia, Hong Kong, US, Canada. Mm-hmm. And I trade a broad variety of crypto markets.
Yeah. Perfect. Awesome. Yeah, that sounds very interesting. I definitely haven't got the old board game when I was young and starting into that, but
yeah, I still got it in cupboard. I quite like it.
Yeah, that's great. I'll have to look it up. I know I was very similar when I came to the corporate world, because I started in a stock brokerage. I can remember literally first week coming in there and doing the same thing and going, oh, this is not for me, but I need this money. I need this experience. It was the same thing, just like going on YouTube or whatever it was, how to make side income so I can leave from here. So yeah, really interesting. So I guess from that then, because I know you just briefly touched on it, there's so many different ways to trade, whether it's mechanical, whether it's systematic, whatever you like to call it, or it's just price action, smart money, whatever. I know that you have a systematic trading style there. What drew you into that? Why did you go, okay, out of all these things that I can do here, this is the path that I want to go down?
Yeah, I tried the things that the people around me knew about first, because, you know, often you learn from family, you learn from friends, and, you know, I didn't really have many people in my life that talked about money or were very successful with money, but, you know, my parents had invested and at least knew something about that. And Dad was more of a fundamental investor, so I sort of started with that, saying buy good companies, hold them for, you know, for the long term and collect dividends and they go up, or buy brands that you recognize, stocks that are growing. And you know, look, it wasn't disastrous, but it wasn't profitable, and it certainly didn't really appeal to my mode of thinking, to my need for activity. It was just too slow and boring. And I didn't feel like I had control. It was just like, oh, yeah, that's a good company, I'll buy that. And it's like, wait and see if I was right years later. It just wasn't appealing. And after losing a little bit of money, not a lot, small amount, I decided that there must be other ways. Mm-hmm. Because I knew people were making money. I just wasn't making any.
Yeah.
And so I looked at I started researching different ways of investing. And as I came across technical analysis, I looked at broker recommendations and analyst reports and a bunch of technical things. And I started trading with technical analysis because that was much more appealing to my kind of mathematical brain. And I felt like it gave me some control. Of course, that's completely delusional, but it did feel at the time like, oh, this is, you know, this allows me to choose my entries and exits in a much better way, and I can be more profitable. And that sort of led me down a path. And I started doing the typical thing of looking at charts and finding support and resistance and drawing trend lines and then overlaying some indicators and all that. And I was doing hours every single night analyzing different stocks to find my entries for the next day and place my trades. Mm-hmm. And that, look, it was entertaining, but it was, again, wasn't very successful. And, you know, I was sort of on the verge of, I was on the verge of giving up because I was spending 4 or 5 hours every single night doing this. It wasn't paying off. I was exhausted because I also had a day job. Mm-hmm. And I decided, look, quit or really throw myself into it and figure it out. So I threw myself into it. I read tons and tons of books, and I came across the Market Wizards series.
Oh, yeah.
And most traders have probably come across the Market Wizards series at some point. And I think I highly recommend it because they're interviews with a whole bunch of different professional traders with a huge range of different approaches to the markets. And I was reading through it and I was like, no, I would never do what that person does. No, that guy's life sucks. No, I don't have the skills for that. No, I don't have a supercomputer. No, I can't do this. No, I don't like that market. You know, basically putting big red lines through each of the interviews because of reasons, you know, I couldn't trade those methods or I didn't want to. I didn't want that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But I came to the systematic trading chapters where he was interviewing purely systematic traders. And I was like, oh, that's what I want to do.
This makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. This makes sense to me. Intuitively, I get it. I believe that I could build confidence in a strategy and then just follow the rules. And that's really what led me down the path. Yeah. Systematic trading. Yeah.
That makes total sense. Cause I know, that's my experience from me teaching. It's, when you explain this sort of thing, it's like that whole confidence, like, well, you can build confidence in this because there's certain rules and you can back test that and you can show yourself that it works. And it's all just rule based. It's not, I guess human bias, the old, oh, maybe that looks good, maybe it doesn't, you know, the classic chart pattern wedge, whatever it's going to be. So I totally get that. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I found my emotions before I went systematic, my emotions and how I felt about the world and what was on the news and what had happened to me the day before and all that were really affecting my trading decision. And particularly with regard to my level of aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was never an aggressive trader. I always sized very conservatively and I never used a lot of leverage, but it would still taint, do I take this trade or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I recognized pretty quickly that that was destructive. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up starting like fighting my emotions and battling them when I was doing my discretionary analysis. And when I came across this systematic idea, I saw that immediately as a way to eliminate that. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge step forward for me.
I definitely think so. I mean, and this will be my next question to you in terms of that. Do you think emotions are just the bane of a trader's existence? Like that is the thing that, you know, is the reason why most people who come into the market end up losing, because they have those things where it's the news, where it's your day at work, whatever it is. You bring that into your trading environment and that's where you make mistakes.
Yeah, look, I think for the vast majority of traders, emotions are the bane of their existence. But they don't need to be.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, just facing reality, we're all human. We have emotions. They're not going away.
Yeah.
And so my question to myself a long time ago was, how can I use this? Not how can I defend against it? Because it's part of my nature. I can't, you know, eliminate it. So once I was systematic, I would observe when I first launched my first real trading system, I observed I was still having emotional reactions to it, to the market, to what was going on. And I realized pretty quickly that I could take those emotional reactions and channel them into testing. See, most people have emotional reactions and they go, oh, I really love this trade. I'm going to go big. Or, oh, I got hammered yesterday. I'm going to play it safe today. Or, oh, interest rates are going up. Or, oh, whatever is going on, right? But for me, it was like, oh, that stock looks really ugly. I really don't want to buy that one. Or, oh, this news announcement overnight, that's kind of worrying. And I would then take the next step to say, okay, I wonder if that's real. And then I would take that fear and look at the chart and say, okay, well, what is the evidence on the chart? And so let's say a really great example is this ticker that I'm getting a signal to buy is very volatile. And let's say that made me nervous. Mm-hmm. So I then look at the chart and go, oh, look, it's very volatile. How do I define volatility in this context that's making me nervous? Mm-hmm. And then let's convert that to a rule and let's put that into the system and then backtest the system over years of data, decades, mm-hmm. and see if avoiding situations like that see if avoiding situations like that are beneficial or detrimental to my trading. Mm. So taking the emotional stimulus and channeling it into testing does one of two awesome things. It either builds confidence in your existing rules because it shows you that that emotional reaction is unwarranted, so just ignore it. Mm-hmm. Or it uncovers little pots of gold that improve your edge, and therefore you add new rules to your system and it makes it more profitable. Mm-hmm. So back to the original question, emotions are the bane of most traders' existence, but they don't need to be if you're systematic because you can take the stimulus, test it, and then use that as insight to improve your trading.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That makes sense. I do think, especially me, when I first started out, I can remember the trade like a machine. You know, it's trade like a machine, do this stuff. And I used to say that at the start. I used to say, you need to trade like a machine. And now I'm like, as close as you can get is awesome to trading like a machine, but understand that we all have our drawbacks in terms of emotions, and it's the handling them and going, okay, I'm this sort of person. This is how I can deal with that. And I think a systematic trading approach, just as you were saying, you put all these things and you go, well, I'll take the fear, just like you said, of this news event, whatever it is, the volatility in the market, and you go, how do I define this? I'm afraid of volatility, but what is volatility for me? If you've got a systematic system where you go, this is a rule, then I think you can overcome that.
Yeah. And I think the trick is to insert some, work hard on yourself to insert some space between emotion and reaction. Because mm-hmm. in trading, having an emotion and reacting immediately in your trading is dangerous, right? But if we can create a little space and insert curiosity, It's like, oh, I had an emotional reaction. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Then it opens up the opportunity to do some research or analysis to investigate. And I found that process, or I find that process very clearing from a psychological point of view. So it definitely improves my trading psychology. But also it uncovers interesting things about the markets that you can use in trading strategies.
Definitely. I think that's an incredible point is insert space, which I totally agree with, but insert it like curiosity in there to change the maybe a negative emotion into more of a positive one. I know when I was backtesting some of my strategies, they came around because of curiosity, but having it as a tool to maybe shift that mindset is absolutely incredible. Because I think most humans, regardless, we're inquisitive creatures. We like to understand why something works. I know for most new traders, there's that cycle where something goes wrong in the markets and your brain will go, we need to learn X, Y, and Z so we can figure out why that went wrong. So then we can put it into the markets and then we can change it there. So I think that is really interesting in terms of that. And I would definitely, to everyone that's listening here, say that's fantastic. You should be implementing that straight away. So really good. I've never come across that. So that's definitely something new.
It's also pretty useful in life too, right? I mean, how many stupid things do we do or say because we had an emotional reaction to something external, right?
Yeah.
If you can just insert that little bit of space and understand, you know, insert the curiosity to understand your own reaction, then our own actions in life become much more sensible as well, which can't be a bad thing.
Yeah, there we go. We've got trading advice and life advice all wrapped up in the same package there. So
absolutely.
Easy. I guess just to finish this section out about, you know, starting, we're understanding you're a systematic trader, you know, some of the common mistakes that we're going around. And that's what I really want to touch into here. Because we've talked about emotions being the bane of quite a few traders. Did you find that a systematic approach, because obviously I'm a systematic trader as well, did you find that it eliminated or does eliminate, you know, common mistakes that you might see from your own mentors, people that you're specifically teaching, and your own personal experience?
Look, absolutely. Because if you think about the trading process, there's many points in the trading process where we can make mistakes, right? And at the very beginning, finding the signals to take is fraught with danger, you know, particularly if your emotion is getting in the way. You know, we might be optimistic about the world, so we have a bullish tilt, so we go looking for stocks to buy, or, you know, currencies to buy, or cryptos to buy, whatever it is we're trading. Having the decision-making systemized, so we operate on objective rules. If A and B and C happen, we buy. If D or E happen, we sell. Eliminates the variability in our decision-making process. Mm-hmm. And I find that takes care of a lot of the common mistakes. Mm-hmm. So then we've got the implementation. The mistakes we can make at that point are, do I place this trade? You know, I've got the signal from the system. And if you're not automated, you then have to actually go press the button and place the trade. So you can make mistakes there, but the good thing is the system is making the decision. It's not us.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the system's telling me to trade. So it sort of removes us a little bit from the, I don't want to say responsibility, because we're still fully responsible for our trading results, but it helps the ego a little bit because, oh, it's the system's trade, right? It's not, you know, I didn't come up with it. Mm-hmm. So I think it reduces some mistakes of execution as well. But there are still plenty of mistakes you can make. You know, your system's going well. Oh, I better load this system up because it's really making money right now.
Yeah.
Or, oh, you know, I'm thinking that the market's due for a correction, so I think I might scale down this system right now. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, you know, I think I was a bit too conservative last year. Oh, I should use a bit more leverage this year, mm-hmm. because that way I can make even more money. I mean, these are all classic mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think as systematic traders, we can screw ourselves over, frankly, if we're not careful. Mm-hmm. So I really try hard to base everything on the analysis. So backtest the system, you know, develop as much confidence as I can so I can follow it. Then take that system, put into my portfolio kind of analysis tool, and look at the weightings I want to give each strategy. And I set those weightings and I don't change them. I mean, when I do a full portfolio review at a point in the future, like every 6 months or so, I might change the weightings, but I try very hard not to mess with any of the rules, any of the weightings in the interim, because it just leaves you open to mistakes.
Absolutely. I think this is a point that I've raised before. I do feel, especially even intermediate traders do that. I'm going to change it because maybe a month's worth of data has not gone my way. And I remember telling a mentor about this. He's like, I don't think the strategy's not working. And I was like, how much data have you got? He's like, 3 weeks. And I was like, you want to be waiting months and months. And I was like, 3 months, a bare minimum, where you want to say, hey, I've had all this data that points to this and I need to shift it, or I need to do this. Because as soon as you start messing with your risk management, you put more in it because it's been working really well, or you lower it down. You're just open to so many possibilities of screwing yourself over. So I definitely agree. I think it's a hard thing. It's the patience. It's the patience and also relying on the data to go, cool, I'm not going to make any of these decisions because I'm a human. And if I am going on hunches or whatever it is, emotions, should we say, then it's just a thought. And if I always say to everyone, I come to go, okay, how can you justify that decision to me? And it's going, I just thought this. I go, well, it's a thought. I'm like, thoughts are great. It's that curiosity. But you need to be able to back it up and say to me X, Y, and Z, or as what you just said there, you're leaving yourself open to quite a few ways to negatively affect yourself in the markets.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges is it's very easy to underestimate how much data you need to make a valid decision in the market. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people will say, I've back-tested my strategy. Like, okay, so what did you do? Oh, well, I put the indicators on the charts and I looked back and I found the buys and sells and I looked at 50 trades and they were profitable. So I've got a good strategy. It's like, whoa. If you just looked at the chart and did it manually, you've only gone back probably until you got bored or ran out of time. And so if you were diligent, maybe you've got 50 trades. I mean, I've never seen someone with like 100 trades or something that they've back tested manually.
Yeah.
And even that is nowhere near enough, because we need to know, well, what is the performance of the rules in a bull market, in a sideways market, in a bear market, in a volatile market, in a quiet market, when the market changes direction, when it changes direction the other way. You need to see how the rules perform over the full spectrum. Mm-hmm. And then you need to acknowledge that even if you do think it's a profitable strategy, the individual trade outcomes have a huge degree of randomness. So you need hundreds of trades, maybe thousands of trades, mm-hmm, to fully understand what could happen when following the strategy. And I think most people who are trying to do this intervention based on hunches and based on their observations, based on the thoughts, like you said, I think most of them are failing to understand that you need so much data to provide the evidence, again, like you were suggesting, to really justify a decision.
Absolutely, absolutely. The reason I was laughing at the start of that is just because I've had that so many times. So someone goes up and goes, yeah, I've done some backtesting, and I go, okay, cool. I've never encountered one person that has like met my requirements, even though they are personal, where I go, okay, what you done? Oh, I went back a year. Okay, how many trades is that? Especially like on the 1 hour, it goes, oh yeah, I got 50, 60 trades. And I'm like, okay, you have a snapshot of the market. I was just like, go back 3 years, and if you've got 500, 600, 700 examples, and you can actually go through that data, and then I go, and that could just be round one. I mean, it took me for my current strategy about 6-7 months to get out in the market, because I came in, I got the initial data, I collected it all, reviewed it, came through it. And then I was going, okay, what questions can I derive from this? What am I seeing here? Oh, okay, this stop loss is bad, or this, it's not good in ranging markets. Let's go back and test that hypothesis, what I can see here, just make sure. And I did all these drafts to answer all these questions to come out with the polished thing. Whereas some people just kind of go, I've got 50 trades and this is what it's told me and now I can put it in the market. And I go, you can't, you cannot be doing that.
Yeah. I mean, look, to be fair, doing a little bit of some manual backtesting, like 50 odd trades is better than not doing it.
Absolutely.
But it's not sufficient, yeah. Like you say. I mean, so we trade on quite different time frames, you and I, which is cool because there's lots of different ways to trade. You're talking about the sort of 1 hour and much shorter time frames. I'm typically on daily and weekly charts, so I'm much longer term. But I, you know, for the markets I'll trade, I want to backtest over decades. Like in stocks, I want to backtest over 20 years or more. In crypto, I want to go all the way back to inception as much as possible. And yeah, markets have shifted and changed over time. I get that. But we still want as broad a range of market conditions in our test as possible. And you know, the more data we have, the better. And I just feel like if anyone is manually testing their strategy, as in looking on the chart and finding visually the buys and sells, going to an automated backtest approach where you put the rules into the software and the software finds all of the trades for the entire history and allows you then to do, you know, basically to optimize and to add different rules and take rules out and see the impact. It's a huge step forward in the amount of data we can collect and how well we can test and validate our hypotheses about what works and what doesn't.
Absolutely. I do think that's important. I get, in terms of creating my strategy, I use an automation tool, but I also, and this is, I guess, is a good question for you because it might be a difference here between us. I also went back and I make my mentorees backtest because I want them to see specific. Well, my strategy in particular has a certain look to it. You know, I think quite a few strategies do that. Buys look more like this and sells look more like this, especially because mine works in a trending environment. And I go back and I say, hey, go and have a look at the manually backtest. Have a look at it so you can start to train your eyes in the market. Yes, it's systematic and it's very mechanical. We still have if A and B and C happen, you enter. And that's the only way that you enter through here. But have a look at it through here. Get used to trading it. Is that something that you like your mentorees to do? Do you say, oh, maybe you do it a different way? You live test or you forward test on demo account or you make them demo trade. How do you get someone used to a systematic way of trading?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's a few different ways to do it. And, you know, what you proposed is a good way to understand, is this, you know, what does it look like? How are you going to feel when that signal comes up? My approach is in the backtesting process, you want to ask as many questions as you can about what could happen and what if and how does it look and how does it work and how does it move. So in the backtesting process, we're looking at the long-term backtest, but we're also looking in at the short-term movements that the system generates in your account. So it's important to understand if you follow these rules, what the short, medium, and long-term outcomes could look like. Because again, there's a high degree of randomness in what we do. Over time, our strategy has an edge, it's going to make money. But in the very short term, you know, who knows? Today could be a winning day or a losing day. It doesn't really matter. And it doesn't also say anything about the long-term profitability. It's just the randomness.
Yeah.
So I think one of the most important things to understand is how can the strategy play out day by day by day or hour by hour by hour? You know, in your account, how quickly can it move? How big an up day or down day, how big an up hour or down hour could you have? And if you follow these rules, this is the range of outcomes that you might expect. Because if we know what we can expect, then when it happens at either end of the spectrum, we're not surprised.
Yeah.
And we can just follow the rules. But if we just go, oh, it's a profitable strategy, I'm going to start following the rules, and we don't really know what to expect, if this is the range of outcomes and we get a negative outcome down here, it might be perfectly normal, but if we don't know that it's perfectly normal, what happens? We freak out.
Yeah.
You know, emotion comes up. We start making stupid mistakes. So for me, the biggest, once you've decided on the strategy, it's the biggest thing is really understanding what could happen with that strategy. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, I'm fully automated, so I don't actually look at the charts before I take the trades. What I'm really wanting to do is be 100% confident in the strategy and what it does.
Yeah.
In that process, we're going to look at a whole bunch of winning trades. We're going to look at a whole bunch of losing trades. We're going to use them to generate hypotheses to try and make the system better, filter out the garbage, get more of the good ones, and test all of those hypotheses. So we're exhausted of ideas so that all that's left is confidence in the rules. Mm-hmm. Then follow them, knowing what to expect, what could happen day by day, week by week, month by month.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I'll make that distinction for everyone that is listening between a fully automated strategy and what I do, mechanical rules, but still have the human aspect of hopping in. I think regardless of that, what you're saying there is massive, because I think a lot of people do underestimate that impact, because I know I've had traders that go, oh, I've had a bad week or a bad month or whatever it is. And then again, you see those emotions come in and it's just, I'm doing whatever comes to mind now, because they're not 100% confident in how this strategy is going to perform. Even if you've got a 60% win rate, 70% win rate, I always say you got to look at it in terms of a long-term scale. I guess what you were talking about there, like you can have these losing times down here. You could be in this drawdown, and that's perfectly acceptable, because it sounds silly to say this, but I do say it to everyone. It's the winners and the losers aren't win, loss, win, loss, win. It could be loss, 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 win, win, loss, win, whatever it's going to be. It's randomized in terms of that. It's uncertain. So I think it is super important to actually go, hey, this is how it can play out, and I understand that. So when it does happen, I've got the confidence I'm prepared for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the randomness of the sequence is really important. You know, if we don't expect that we could get five losing trades in a row, and we get five losing trades in a row, our emotion is starting to rise, right? So I think it's really important to look at not just, well, A, look at the history. If you followed these rules on that ticker, what was the sequence of trades and what was the biggest string of wins and biggest string of losses and all of that? But then also do some Monte Carlo analysis. If you take that win rate probability and the distribution of trade outcomes and resequence them in many randomized ways, what possible sequence of trades might we get? And you might realize that there's a non-zero probability of having six or eight losses in a row. And if your position sizing is so aggressive that that's going to hurt you, then you better rethink that. So I think that's also really important, is realizing just how much, you know, randomness is in the market and making sure that you're going to survive that.
Yeah.
And when you know that you've got a position sizing and a leverage management, capital exposure sort of strategy and a system that will keep you alive, even on a very, you know, unlikely string of losses, then you can sleep much better at night. I think that's a really sound way to approach it.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to harp on about this too much, but I love what you're talking about, because I go over it quite a lot, the uncertainties. But yeah, I think it's like accepting, once you get that into your head that you go, okay, this is how the market can act, and there is this randomness that's just going to be there no matter what I do, no matter how much I backtest, there can be randomness in there. I remember, for example, when the Ukraine war kicked off and I was in a trade in the euro pairs, and I went in for one of the biggest wins in my life. It just shot down and I was in for a short at the time, and I was sitting there, I was like, wow, this is completely different. And I remember sitting there and going, this is just such a random act that it could have gone the other way, and there's so many factors that can come in and I can lose. And I was like, that's just the reality of it. That's the markets that we're in here is just so random. And I think it's a weird thing, and you might be able to talk on this more, when you are a trader, how do you go about, you know, thinking, I'm going to lose. I'm going to come into the market and I'm going to lose, because, you know, it's not like you go into your office and you go to your boss, hey, if I work bad today, don't pay me. In fact, actually take my money from me. You've got, yeah, access, right. You've got access to my bank account. How have you over the years gone, well, I've got this systematic thing, and it's eliminating emotion to a certain point, and then we're talking about understanding the randomness and the risk of it and doing that sort of stuff. Is it accepting that that helps you with those losses, or have you got another trick?
There's a few tricks, actually. Nowadays, I have a perverse sense of excitement about taking a loss. It's kind of weird. But my rationale is it's get rid of what you don't want to make room for what you do want. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a piece of advice that I take in life and in trading very seriously, because if you've got junk in your life, it's taking up space that is preventing other good things coming. And if I have a trade that's losing and I have potentially good signals that I can't take because I'm fully exposed and I'm supposed to be out of this trade, then there's a huge opportunity cost. So I don't want to keep holding this because something better is coming along. You know, the very best trades typically go straight up from where you buy them. Not always, but generally. Yeah. And they don't come along that often. So you've got to get rid of all the garbage to make space for the ones that you do want. So that's one thing. But the other thing is when you systemize, you're trading, you're now following a process. It's less about buying and selling each ticker. It's more about following a process. Mm-hmm. And so a system makes money because you follow the process. If you don't follow the process, you're not going to make money.
Yeah.
Right? We don't. And I know when I've made mistakes and I've diverged from my process, I lose. So systematic trading is about following the process. It's not about buying and selling and taking wins on individual trades. It's about the process. So we're already removed from that need to be right, that need to take a win. And the great thing is when we have a process, we can win every single time by redefining win. If we define a win as, did I follow my rules today? Then every single day I can say yes and I can be a winner.
Yeah.
Regardless of the financial outcome. Then, so that's great because it removes us from the emotional pain of losing and, oh, I'm a bad trader. I made a bad decision because I had a losing trade, right? That's hard.
Yeah.
But I followed my process 100%. I did what I was supposed to do. Okay, I'm down today. That's not as hard. At least I find.
Yeah.
Go one level higher and we're no longer trading a system. We're trading a portfolio of systems. Mm. So I've got long and short across Australia, Hong Kong, Canada, US, crypto. And within that, there's trend following, mean reversion, rotational momentum, seasonality. There's a lot of systems in there. So I'm following many individual processes, some of which are making money today, some of which are not making money today. So I'm so far divorced from did this trade win or lose that it doesn't affect me at all.
Yeah.
I could not care less. And the more I diversify, the bigger my portfolio, the more systems I'm trading, the more insignificant a trade is anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So I guess that's the way I cope with it. It doesn't matter. Have a losing trade. Okay.
Mm. I mean, that's a fantastic point. Something that I've said on here a few times, it's follow the process. Like if you do A and B, C, which is profits, should everything go correctly, our backtesting, our strategy, everything works, and it should, that's the outcome. As soon as you take out part of the equation, you don't get it. So that's what I'm always saying. Hey, do not be dollar driven, be process driven. And to the fact that I go, hey, you are putting in your trading journal what you're doing and you're writing everything down. I even say, just look at it in terms of percentages. Because as soon as I get that dollar value in, I can see people's minds start to turn and it changes. But it's just all that process. If you do A and B, you make 2%, you make 3%, whatever it is. So that is amazing. But I think it's a revelation here from me. I have a few strategies on the go. I think that is a massive bonus to go, oh, yeah, today, you know, the strategy A wasn't working, but strategy C is actually okay and strategy B is just doing its thing. So there's levels to it. And I think that's a huge thing in terms of, yeah, trading a portfolio. Maybe it's a bit more advanced than the beginner traders to start off with.
Oh, sure. There's just something to aspire to, right? I mean, yeah. Having the pressure to be right on this trade is psychologically really difficult. Mm-hmm. I just want to try to create some separation from that. So it's not about my ego needing to be right. It's about, you know, just having a process. You think about Toyota, right? They make cars. They don't try and optimize each individual car. They make the cars exactly the same way every single time, and they manage that process extremely tightly. And then they gradually improve the process so that the whole thing, the whole production line works. Training a system is like that. We have a production line. The trained outcomes are different, so it's not like car manufacturing in that respect, but the process to generate the trades, open and close them, size them, that's a process that should be the same every single time. And it just makes trading psychologically so much easier.
Wow. Yeah, I think that that is definitely a huge thing. And anyone listening to that should definitely write that stuff down. That's fantastic. I love that. Cool. I guess moving forward from there then, because we've done a lot of talking about, hey, this is systematic trading, a bit of psychology in there. And I know that's what we both do here. There's so much information out there in the markets. Well, not in the markets, but on YouTube and Instagram and everything that says, oh, yeah, this is mechanical strategy, or this is, you know, this is a systematic trading style. And I look at it and I just go, that's not it. I was like, that's not it. Some of that is just, you've literally just said in here, this is the pattern that we're looking for if this happens. And it's just completely like you're eyeballing it. So for you, what are the, for even a beginner to understand, what are the key elements where you go, this is what I'm looking at. This is what you have to include in order to say, this is systematic.
The key thing is, can you write those rules down and give them to someone else and have that other person find exactly the same trade every single time without fail? Because if the rules are 100% objective, as in they're purely defined based on numbers, formulas, rules, they should be transferable. So I could take my rules, I could give them to you. Tomorrow we run the rules, we'll generate exactly the same trades. There's no subjectivity, no decision, no squinting at them sideways going, look, in my experience, this is a situation where I'd skip the trade. Like, that's subjectivity. And so even if you're 99% systematic and 1% subjective, you're 100% subjective in my view, because you're not able to reproduce it, because it relies on that little bit of subjectivity to, for you to get your results and me to get my results. So systematic trading is purely rules-based, no subjectivity, can be transferred, can be written into code so that the computer can find the trades for you. That's the primary kind of, I guess, dimension of what's systematic, what's not in my book. So a lot of things like trend lines, like wedges, patterns, that's really hard to be systematic with because they're so subjective.
Yeah.
So I don't typically don't use rules like that.
Yeah. I think it's the exact same for me. I don't use those rules because it's just a human bias. What you could think today was that trend line, tomorrow it can be completely different. And you could.
Yeah. And it changes in retrospect, right? So there's also some rules in technical analysis, like some indicators that you've got to be really careful of, because you put them in the middle of the chart and they look like they give good signals, but at the hard right edge, they change day by day retrospectively. So it's an indicator that trips so many people up, the zigzag indicator. Just never use the zigzag indicator. Because it changes day by day until the whole history is basically has played out. So in the middle of the chart, it looks sensible, but at the time it was in a different spot. It was giving you a different value, and that adjusted. And you can't have rules like that. It needs to be something that you always know at the time exactly what the value of the indicator or rule is. And it doesn't retrospectively adjust, because then if it does, you're not making consistent decisions.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's it's a great way of pointing it out and saying, this is what it is. These are what it is. And we've already gone over the benefits of doing it, especially when, I mean, it's nigh impossible to backtest. And if you can't do that, you can't have a win rate. Therefore, you're not going to have a good risk to reward. Therefore, your risk management is going to be completely off. And people wonder when they come into it, they go, I'm doing it. I swear I'm doing everything right. And this is all happening. And then it's, oh, actually, I'm not doing it all right. And it's kind of rigged from the jump. So hence why early on, when I know I started out and I was like, I'm going to do something like this. I saw this YouTube or whatever it was strategy. I'm going to do this. And then finding it actually after talking to someone that trades full time professionally, he was like, all of that stuff's crap. You need to be doing X, Y, and Z, and that's it, in that order. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do it.
The subjectivity is a real killer because the impact of it is far bigger than we might think. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you know, I've got my rules and I've just got my little bit of discretion because that kind of keeps me out of trouble. That little bit of wiggle room creates huge variability in your outcomes. And you can't test it. So you don't know whether you're going to be positive when you've got that wiggle room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very, it's,
yeah.
I just wanted to, my mind's racing here in terms of, in terms of what you'd be saying, different ideas are coming through there. So yeah, even that one little thing, it's the butterfly effect, isn't it? It's just, okay, well, here you go. And I think you said it before as well, changes retrospectively. You come back and you access the same thing. You forgot about this particular setup and then you come back and you go, oh yeah, it was a winner. But actually, if you go back and you look at the trade that you took, it was a loser. And then you go, oh, how did I get a losing? I should have done this. Why didn't I do this? Because at the time, you don't have those set rules. So then you go through there and you're just like, oh, what is going on?
Yeah. So it's important when we're testing rules to only test rules that we would have reasonably known at the moment we had to place the trade. And that's an important distinction as well, because some people will look at economic data and go, oh yeah, you know, interest rates are doing this or that or whatever. But if you don't have that data point at exactly the moment you have to take the trade, then you can't use it in your rules because you can't test it, because you can't trade on it effectively. And the, you know, another good example is, you know, I know Forex is a 24-hour market, but like taking in the situation of stocks, some people will test a system and they'll test based on what happens on the closing price. And then they'll try and get that, and then they'll convince themselves they can get in at the close. But if you have to know the closing price to get in at the close, that's information you don't have at the time you're trying to get in. So you've got to be very careful how you construct your strategy so that it's realistically tradable. And I think that's an easy mistake to make when we're just backtesting, right? Because it's easy to backtest anything and trick yourself into thinking you could do it in real life, but you've got to be able to reproduce it. And so thinking through, okay, could I really follow these rules in real time? I think that's another important distinction of what is good systematic trading.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. That definitely makes a lot of sense. I guess another thing moving on from here, because that was fantastic. But I'll have traders come in, right, that just trade particular one market. Maybe it's stocks, maybe it's Forex, maybe it's crypto or whatever. And you're more like me in the sense of we span across different markets. And obviously there's a lot of things that do cross over and there are some things that are different. What made you step over and go, that goes, hey, I want to come into the crypto markets now?
Yeah, it's important because it's really easy to stick to what we know, you know, and I stuck to what I knew, which was long side trend following in Australian stocks for years before I realized how much value I was leaving on the table. And what made me step into crypto, for example, was here's a market which is not as highly, it has a low degree of correlation with everything else I'm trading. The sorts of strategies I'm already using work really, really well. And if I add it to my portfolio, it improves the overall profitability of the portfolio without actually adding that much risk, if any risk. So, you know, what I found with crypto, which was interesting, was a portfolio of 90% stocks, 10% crypto, both of those had roughly the same dollar volatility. But my catastrophic risk on the crypto side is low because it's only 10% of the portfolio. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that, I mean, it's not exactly like that, but it's, you know, just think those round numbers. When I saw that, I was like, oh, that's actually a really powerful way of diversifying because I'm not taking a lot of catastrophic risk. You know, if the market, you know, completely craps itself, okay, I'll take a loss, but it's going to be small. But it moves very differently to everything else in the portfolio. And I think that's the primary driver for me now is whenever I'm looking to improve the portfolio, it's like, how much value does this strategy or this market add in a diversification sense? And when I looked at crypto, it added a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was a pretty, frankly, it was a pretty easy decision. I was a bit slow on the uptake. I'm not an early adopter when it comes to crypto, but I've been trading it for a good few years. And it's, you know, it adds a lot to the portfolio because it moves differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting in our first initial discussion because I think we started roughly around the same time. You might have started a bit before me, but I did the same thing. And I think it links into what you were saying before in terms of you're trading a portfolio. You've got that extra diversity in there, which is always fantastic. I mean, crypto is a small part of my own portfolio, talking about risk and everything. But I was like, oh, okay, there is crossover here. I can do this. And if I'm adding it into my portfolio, is that next degree of separation from when Forex is doing badly or my one hour time frames are great, my 2 hour time frames are poor or whatever it was. So adding that in was fantastic. And I too really looked at it and I was like, well, there's a lot of crossover here. It's not, I think a lot of people come into it with the expectation that each market is, you know, it's cats and dogs. It could not be more different. And in some cases, yeah, but I also think in a lot of cases, there is that crossover as well.
Yeah, I think markets definitely have different personalities, but we can take what we know from one market in terms of process, backtesting, sensible system design, what type of edge, what type of strategy, trend following, mean reversion, rotational momentum, etc., and apply it to other markets. And some of those translate well, some of them don't. You know, like in stocks, the Hong Kong market trades differently to the Australian market. Crypto trades differently to Forex. But a lot of the principles that keep us alive are similar.
Yeah.
And the construct of a good strategy, similar. Mm-hmm. And in fact, many good strategies will work on a lot of markets that we apply them to. We just don't want to blindly assume they do because the personalities of the markets are a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's very good. I think that's a very good summation of how it is. Because when you look at the key underlying principles of most markets, like this might not be the best one, but a trend line is a trend line on any market. That's what it is. You know, there are these core key concepts that underpin markets, whether you're looking at just the core of price action or whatever it is where you can go, oh, I see that over here. That roughly does the same thing. Yes, personality, I think that's a great way to put it. Is different. Crypto does have different personality. Its volatility is off the chart sometimes, especially compared to Forex. But when you look at it, you can go, I can use those things and I can move it forward. So
I think also the way of thinking about the systems is the same in all markets. I mean, you've got to keep an edge, you've got to have a positive expectancy. To have a positive expectancy, you've got to get the size of wins and the size of losses balanced appropriately. You've got to control the size of your loss. You can't let them get out of control. To some extent, you know, and you've got to let your profits run. You know, you don't have to train follow all the time and let them run and run and run. You can have profit targets and everything, but you've got to know that your statistics will work in your favor.
Absolutely.
And we've got to know that if we have multiple trades in our portfolio, they're not too highly correlated. So it's essentially one big trade. Yeah. So all of that translates between markets. Mm-hmm. And I think once you know how to trade systematically in one market, jumping to another market is not a huge stretch. You've just got to learn the nuance and personality.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, I have loved talking about this, especially talking to systematic trader. It's absolutely fantastic. A lot of guys aren't on the same wavelength, so this has been really fun for me diving into that. I'd love you to just say to everyone here, you know, what you've going on, YouTube, your website, how people can find you, what you've got.
Sure. Yeah, so in case you missed the start, I'm Adrian Reed, founder of Enlightened Stock Trading. I've been trading 25 odd years, all 100% systematic. And I trade a portfolio across multiple stock markets and crypto. If you want to learn about that style of trading, go to enlightenedstocktrading.com/free. There's a bunch of resources, some free courses. You can get a free trading system there and a couple of ebooks that'll help explain more about this style of trading. If you want to watch more of my stuff, Enlightened Stock Trading on YouTube, same thing on Facebook, just search it and you'll find me. But I've got a whole bunch of free resources. So check out enlightenedstocktrading.com/free And that'll really kind of give a really good flavor for the style of systematic trading that I do.
Easy. Perfect. And for everyone that is listening, I'm going to have it in the description to this episode as well. So if you are interested in systematic trading, which I hope you are, or fully automated, or you want to diversify your portfolio, which is, again, I highly suggest that you do, as we both here do the exact same thing, well, it would be silly not to get involved. So thank you for being on my podcast. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much. Great to be on. Appreciate your time, Alex.
Well, I promised a fantastic interview and Adrian just blew it out of the water. He fulfilled my promise to you guys. Really, really fantastic having him on. It's great to have two traders with a lot of experience. I mean, he's got 10 years more than me in terms of trading experience on there. Yet you can tell from how we talk to each other that a systematic or a mechanical way of trading is the best. And if you are not convinced now, I don't know how you ever will be. If you want to expand your portfolio, if you want to go into the stock market, then please, by all means, contact Adrian at enlightenedstocktrading.com. It would be wonderful if you guys could get in touch, should that be something that you want to do. Again, I've linked it in the description below. Anyway, guys, that is it from me. Have a wonderful and prosperous trading day, and I will see you in the next one. Bye.